Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Well, I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
Good morning, 810 here on News Radio 92.3, informative local Friday, and a little bit cooler than it has been. Don't get too excited yet. It's not October, but still, you know, we're getting closer, right? Julio Diaz is the host of Let's Go Pensacola at 4 o'clock on Saturday here on News Radio, and also the host, organizer, creator, founder, and CEO/premier, the movie czar, we like to call him, of the Pensacola Movie Club on Facebook. I know. That's a long business card. It's actually three business cards with a foldout. Julio Diaz, welcome back with Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Yes, I have the only business card that has a centerfold.
Nice.
Yeah, you are.
Just for that one part. sorry. Anyway, I'm going to try to get this right. Aristotle and Dante discover the secrets of the universe. Did I get it right?
You got it correct.
That's amazing. That's the one time. All right. How is it? How was it?
It's a good film. This is kind of a small movie. It's based on a popular young adult novel that came out, I guess about 10 years ago. It's not one of there was a big rush to every popular young adult novel about 10 years ago kind of got optioned into being made a movie. And a lot of them, it was kind of in the wake of the Hunger Games, and there was a lot
of Maze Runner. And you're right. I think of all of those
dystopian things. And then there were a few that were the opposite of that, ones that were the weepies, The Fault in Our Stars, that kind of stuff. Somebody's going to die of cancer, blah,
right.
blah, blah. This is actually neither of those. This is just kind of more of a to-the-point, direct coming-of-age story about two young men who are kind of alienated. They meet. They become friends. Maybe that they're more than friends.
Okay.
It takes place during the 80s. I kind of really related to that because I took place during the 80s. So these guys are about the same age I was there. The music in this movie is really on point. I really enjoyed that in particular. Some great songs on it. Well written, well acted, small little movie. Maybe not for everybody, but it's a very solid film. I think most people will be able to relate to it and get some enjoyment out of it.
Okay. All right. Very good. By the way, I don't know why you make me think of, but the remake of Valley Girl, the newer one,
yeah.
Great music in that film. That's very much that same thing of this is my youth. Fantastic. Another one we've got out this week is, and everybody's been waiting for this, okay, big hype around The Nun 2.
Just no. The Conjuring universe just needs to go away. The fact that there is a Conjuring universe just in and of itself, that somehow they've connected the seven Conjuring movies and the four Annabelle movies and the
Well, do you have to watch them all in order, like the MCU?
Is the CU
demanding?
Just the fact that all of this is just built around these two real people who are nothing but charlatans
that
have gone out and basically exploited people and their fears and their, that in and of itself. I understand that a couple of the Conjuring movies are actually pretty decent films, but this is just,
Okay. All right. Fair enough. I mean, that is enough of a review for me. What about?
Not going to stop it because it's making money, but the reviews are terrible, and I have no desire to be a part of it.
But what about My Big Fat Greek Wedding 3, the other highly demanded sequel to a sequel?
Can you answer a question for me?
No, go on.
Demanded by whom? Seriously, who was asking for this movie? That's what I want to know. I mean, I recognize the first movie was very, 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 very popular.
Right.
It was this crazy out of left field hit.
Right.
That, and this was a little movie that could. And you kind of got to kind of respect that.
So you couldn't resist making a sequel, obviously. You can't stop yourself.
They made another one that nobody cared about.
Right.
And that was 15 years ago? 10 years ago.
So they're really
like
striking while the iron is cold, is what you're telling me.
Yeah. And let's not forget that there was a sitcom in there, too.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. Oh, my God. You're right. I forgot about that. Okay.
That Nia Vardalos was contractually obligated to, that nobody watched.
Well, So
why is this not on the streaming service? Why is this even getting in theaters? Why was this made?
I think those are fair questions. What are you going to watch next week, Julio?
I don't know yet. There's a few things opening up, so we're waiting to kind of get some advance review on what might be decent. Not a whole lot this time of year, because it's that just that time of year where everything gets dumped out.
And I'll say this for you only because you didn't say it. Julio still has a standing ovation review for Bottoms. If you're going to see a movie, that would apparently be the one that he still recommends you see if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, I actually thought about going to see that again. Ah,
that, exactly.
Although Aristotle and Dante is a very good movie.
Okay, all right, very good.
Just check out the Facebook group. Pensacola Movie Club on Facebook, and when we know, you will know there.
He's the czar of it. Go there. Also, check out Let's Go Pensacola, 4 o'clock tomorrow. Julio, as always, thank you for the time, sir. We'll talk to you next week.
No worries. Thanks, Andrew.
All right, 8:15 here on News Radio 92.3, Transgressors Memorial Service. The late service comes up next. Candy's got traffic on the fives.
And the good news is we're not showing any of these slowdowns or delays right now. It looks like everything's running smoothly. No problems on I-10, I-110. Pine Forest looking just fine, not showing any issues on Mobile Highway either. If you see an accident or a slowdown, 437-1620, News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Hi, I'm Billy Anderson with Anderson Subaru in Pensacola. At Anderson, we know Subarus are built better, and we're not the only ones who think so. Subarus earn more IIHS Top Safety Pick Plus awards than Honda, Toyota, or Hyundai brands since 2013 as of July 2023. When it comes to safety, Subarus are better. And when it comes to longevity, well, Subaru wins there too. According to a study by Experian Automotive, Subaru leads the industry in longevity with 96% of vehicles sold in the last 10 years still on the road today. More than Honda or Toyota brands. Hands down, Subaru has the longest lasting vehicles in the automotive industry, all of which makes it easy to love a Subaru from Anderson Subaru. Visit us on Highway 29, just north of Car City, Pensacola, or shop us online at AndersonSubaru.com.
Anderson's got a Subaru for you.
Based on Experian Automotive non-luxury vehicles and operation excluding trucks and vans versus total new registrations for model years 2013 through 2022 as of December 2022.
Work, kids, finances. Your life has lots of moving parts. Let Gulf Winds help you keep them all moving forward. Our free digital banking tools make it easy for busy bill payers to manage the day-to-day. Our simple applications and low loan rates get mommy chauffeurs on the road fast. And our free accounts and low fees put extra cash in pockets so weekend warriors can have a splash more fun. We're here for you and everyone living life to the fullest. How can we move you forward? See all the ways at GoGulfWinds.com. Federally insured by NCUA.
The Port of Pensacola is more than just a name. It's a powerhouse of economic opportunities, a strategic location that sparks growth and prosperity, contributing significantly to the local and regional economy with 23 incredible businesses that call this port home. Big names like C-Mex Materials, GE Wind Energy, Pensacola Bay Oysters, and soon the prestigious American Magic Sailing Team. Since 1754, the Port of Pensacola has been the driving force behind Northwest Florida's economic success. Explore more at portofpensacola.com.
Pensacola Right Now with Joe and Gracie. It's like headline news for radio. Every day, 4 to 7 on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
The first remembrance this week is for Wes Anderson, the filmmaker behind movies like The Fantastic Mr. Fox, Rushmore, and The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou. Unfortunately, Anderson has been caught red-handed in a direct heresy by the Interlateran Council on Identifying Theological Unsavoryisms. It happened when he told Deadline that he doesn't think Roald Dahl's work should be revised for modern standards and values. As he said, quote, "I don't even want the artist to modify their work. I understand the motivation for it, but I'm in the school where, when the piece of work is done, we participate in it. We know it. So I think when it's done, and certainly no one who is not an author should be modifying somebody's book. He's dead, end quote. Well, this will not do at all. Anderson is directly rejecting our second most important sacrament, the holy rite of literary revisionism. As any novice knows, we participate directly in the sacred spirit of inclusion's glorious harmony unity by our eagerness to revise not only our own past sentiments, but the past sentiments of others to reflect the triumphal truths of today. How else can the zeitgeist be continually renewing and purifying itself toward the future nirvana when we do not even use words at all because there's nothing left that we're allowed to say? We all know that eradicating past bad words is ultimately fulfilled by the elimination of all words whatsoever. Hence our motto, true freedom of speech comes from saying nothing at all. Praise Gaia. Well, if Wes Anderson won't change the offensive content of The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar and rejects the benevolent posthumous redactions applied to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and Matilda, our only recourse is to banish him from this, the holy congregation of the eternally non-judgmental. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, The Little Black Mermaid. Disney's recent remake of the animated travesty from 1989. Now look, I know black isn't officially in the title, but it should be, since we should not be afraid to celebrate the evolution of Ariel and her sisters towards racial inclusion. And of course, we do recognize the numerous improvements in the film, such as the removal of that horrible song Les Poissons, featuring the brutal fish killer Chef Louis. That scene is completely triggering to anyone who recognizes the moral status of marine life. Fish are people too, you know.
Les poissons, how I love les poissons! Love to chop and to serve little fish! First I cut off their heads, then I pull out their bones! Ah, mais oui, ça c'est toujours délicieux!
Good riddance. And of course, we also honor the brilliant changes to the lyrics of that infamous ballad of misogyny, Kiss the Girl, with its romanticized message of mouth assault, encouraging Prince Eric to forget asking permission and just go for it with Ariel.
Possible she wants you to. There is one way to ask her. It don't take a word, not a single word. Go on and kiss the girl.
Good. Wow. What an awful message that you ask. That you ask for kissing by doing it instead of, you know, asking. Of course, the new version properly rejects this sexual assault and completely reverses the message by replacing the toxic male aggression with feminist respect for words and permission.
Yes, you want her. Look at her, you know you do. Possible she wants you to. Use your words, boy, and ask her.
Hallelujah.
If the time is right, then the time is tonight. Go on and kiss the girl.
Much better. And yes, we even recognize the value in retaining some of the original progressive themes, such as that women often make the terrible decision to give up their voices just in order to appeal to a man, that men ruling the world, or the undersea world, only leads to disastrous consequences, and that children, especially daughters, are right to defy their patriarchal father enslavers. But this is where the praise must end. How can we affirm this new version when it continues to perpetuate so many horrible lessons? It's not the messages that changed which offend us, it's the messages that stayed the same. First, the premise of this movie has always been and still is that a woman's entire purpose in life is to find the right man and seduce him into marrying her, even going so far as to sacrifice her own fish-bottomed, beautiful mermaid nature to become a two-legged human to fit into his world and to accommodate his reproductive preferences. That entire theme remains and is shown as the path toward happiness for Ariel and Eric. Second, are we really in the year of our Gaia 2023 still teaching people that the proper personification of villainy is an overweight, butch-cut, screechy-voiced sea witch? Disney might as well have put a giant L on Ursula's chest, placed Birkenstocks on her tentacles, and played an Indigo Girls song in the background. But even ignoring the obvious anti-lesbian messages here, why does Disney continue to segregate the ocean into good sea creatures that crawl and fly like crabs and seagulls, on the one hand, and wicked ones that slither like eels and octopi, on the other hand? Where's the justice for the undulators? Fat shaming and orientation marginalization aside, the overt anti-wriggle bias of this movie is horrendous. And since we're speaking of Ursula, What a tremendous opportunity missed by having her still have to transform herself into a demure, thin young hottie with long hair and come-hither looks to distract the prince. We had hoped the writers would perhaps take this opportunity to allow Ursula to remain a thick chick, or keep short hair, or even use her screechy voice and still be appealing to a man. What a great chance for body positivity squandered. But alas, we have yet another reinforced message that girls must imitate pageant queens to win the prince. So if you're thinking the Little Black Mermaid might be a welcome feast for your poor, unfortunate, progressive souls, I'm so sorry to disappoint. Updated but inadequate, this overly long musical reminds us why Disney's application for membership in our denomination is still on hold pending review, because it seems for every wheelchair push forward, they suffer two wheelchair pushes backward. And thank you to Jillian Price for helping us learn that saying one step forward and two steps backward is an ableist cliche. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, a word of praise for George Koob, the director of the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism. Yes, President Biden's alcohol czar, although we prefer the term Minister of Alcohol Reform, since we don't want to be found guilty of promoting the nomenclature favored by Nicholas and the other pre-revolutionary Russian emperors. Yes, Director Koob recently stated he intends to recommend that adults in the United States consume no more than 2 alcoholic drinks per week, down from the current 2 per day maximum for men and 1 per day limit for women. The reason we admire this bold recommendation is the obvious fact that nobody will obey it. Recall your catechism, chapter 16, paragraph 158. The only rules worth making are the ones that are impossible to follow, for therein may one continually strive for the unachievable while also remaining eternally vulnerable to infinite criticism. We adore this new rule because it will simultaneously produce resentment, resistance, and frustration while also making everyone feel guilty about their total failure to adhere to it. Moreover, the absurdly harsh restriction will expand the ability of the morality police to selectively enforce the rules whenever it suits their purposes, since everyone becomes an offender. So well done, not a czar Koob. You keep finding outrageous ways to restrict people's freedom and thereby bring us one step closer to the blissful condition of total government regulation of everything. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
As you depart today, please remember the suffering of our dear friends Ben, James, and Sally, Juniper Thompson-Jones, who went to parent conference this week as the thruple they are and had to endure the soul-shaking indignity of their son's teacher's office only having 2 chairs available. Just when you think the world is finally starting to overcome its regressive monogamist biases, something like this happens. Refreshments this week are provided by Green is Good, the Grass and Weed Emporium on 10th Avenue. You're definitely going to want to try some of the locally sourced organic crabgrass tarts with thistle sauce. And the Zoysia Centipede blended tea is just plain... well, it's just plain. You really don't appreciate the Earth's flavor until you drink some of her least appealing undergrowth, lovingly steeped in hot water.
And now, brethren, sistren, and otheren, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.
I love that that one caught your laugh.
Oh my God, dude. I love the ending. I love the beginning, but I'm glad you finally agree with me on all that stuff.
Yeah, no, we're totally on the same page. Why don't you tell them about traffic, Candy?
I will. I'm still trying to get over what you call the new version of the Little Mermaid, but, you know, that's just me, I guess. As we take a look around, we're not showing any slowdowns or delays. Like I said, 98, I-10, I-110, all reporting as clear. Taking a look at Scenic Heights, 12th Scenic, not showing any problems. 9th also clear, good to go. If you have traffic tips, text 437-1620, News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
I'll give my honest opinion of The Little Mermaid, the new one. It's fine. It's not great. The new songs didn't captivate me. The dropping of Les Poissons did disappoint me. But other than that, it's just fine.
I'm sure they geared it towards a 52-year-old white guy.
I'm the one who knew it as a kid. The other, well, not a kid even, but
no,
you know,
you weren't, dude. You were in college.
As a younger person.
I know. So, you know,
it mostly what it made me want is I just wanted to go back and watch the original, which is never what it should make you like the thing itself.
How are you watching the original as like a teenager?
Could be on VHS. Let's see. Steve's in the newsroom with our headline, Steve.
Well, the Fulton County Special Grand Jury report related to former President Donald Trump's Georgia election interference case is set to be released basically in about half an hour. And an alligator, which caused New Jersey Park to close last week, has been captured in a nearby area. After several sightings, police finally caught up with the alligator yesterday in Piscataway, responding commanding officers put a leash around the 4-foot gator's neck and drove it to Piscataway Police Headquarters, where it's kept in its own cell block. It's not clear how they, you know, got there, since gators are not exactly native to New Jersey. But this one apparently popped up. Probably somebody tossed it out when it was little, brought it, and of course, you know that, with pets. And those are your headlines.
Do you remember that movie where they flushed that baby alligator down the toilet and it took over New York City? I was too when you said that.
Hey, can I make you feel, for a second, can I make you feel good about the Milton City Council meetings?
Yeah.
This comes from a school board in Ohio, Tip City, where the member is upset at the chairman of the committee. Put my mic up.
To the committee, to the board. There's been regular reports from the facility committee reports to the board. There have been, I'm talking, do not interrupt me, do not make any noises or else I will not tolerate it.
Oh.
Stop talking.
And she threw the Nazi salute at him and he resigned after the meeting. It could always be worse, y'all.
Fox News, I'm Therese Crowley. President Biden arriving in India for the G20 summit but facing stiff re-election headwinds. 82% of Democrats say they'd rather see someone else run for president. That's a CNN poll. Three-quarters of voters seriously concerned about his age. 3 out of 5 think he's made the economy worse. And 5 of the Republican slate beat Biden in a head-to-head matchup. Nikki Haley, the biggest, beats Biden 49-43. One political figure still beloved among most. At London's Hyde Park, marking the one-year anniversary of the death of Queen Elizabeth II, her son King Charles recalling with great affection her long life and devoted service. While Atlantic storm Hurricane Lee churns up the fish, now a monster Cat 5, the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast on alert for next week. America is listening to Fox News.
Good morning and happy Friday. It's 8:31, 77 degrees and partly sunny in Pensacola. I'm Steve Taylor for News Radio 92.3. A man is hurt after a shooting in Escambia County. It happened around 8 o'clock last night near Bud Johnson Road in Fields Lane. The sheriff's office says he was taken to the hospital, but there's no word on his condition yet. Channel 3 News reports the suspect is in custody, but no charges have been announced and there's no word on a motive. Escambia County commissioners voted in favor of placing a new ordinance on county waterways. During last night's commission meeting, commissioners voted to put an ordinance in place for floating structures, especially one that some voters call a floating tenement in Bayo Chico. That's a hazard in the bayou right now. Escambia County Marine Resources Manager Robert Turpin told Channel 3 News,
"A houseboat is different than a floating structure. A houseboat is a boat. It's a vessel. These structures are not subject to, generally not subject to engineering and designs for the types of forces that can be encountered on the waterways. Sometimes people take the approach that if it floats, it'll work."
The ordinance would keep these structures from anchoring or mooring in the water, but it would not impact regulated houseboats or actual vessels. Today is the final day of the second of two Florida disaster preparedness sales tax holidays. The savings end at midnight tonight. Eligible items include flashlights, batteries, tarps, generators, fuel containers, and coolers. Some new items included in this year's list are toilet paper, paper towels, soap, sunscreen, cleaning products, and trash bags. Well, let's check out what's happening in the financial world. This is Your Money Now on News Radio 92.3. Since May of this year, wage growth in the U.S. has been outpacing inflation on an annual basis for the first time since prices first surged over 2 years ago. Trey Thomas has more on that.
Bank rate analyst Sarah Foster says it doesn't mean Americans' wallets have fully recovered.
The economy is turning a corner. The gap is closing. But when you compare how much prices have risen since the beginning of 2021, we can see that there's about a 3-point gap for wages.
Foster says the bank rate analysis indicates that the gap between prices and wages isn't going to close until the fourth quarter of 2024. I'm Trey Thomas.
And at the opening bell, the Dow Jones average was up 16 points at 34,513. S&P 500 up 8 points at 4,460. And right now, let's check the forecast for the weekend from Channel 3.
This is meteorologist Brooke Richardson with your first warning weather update. Beautiful day today with mostly sunny skies. Temperatures will be warming up into the low 90s for highs. Overnight tonight, big drop in temperatures. We will be in the mid to upper 60s inland. Along the coast could still see some upper 60s. As you go into Saturday afternoon, we will be warming back up into the 90s. Small chance of rain each and every day, but mostly sunny for most of us. As you go into Saturday night, temperatures dropping into the low 70s. Stay connected to the Channel 3 News First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV Weather App. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Right now, it's warming up. 78 in Pensacola, 79 in Gulf Breeze, and 77 in Milton at 8:35. The next news is at 9. Breaking news anytime. I'm Steve Taylor for News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Are you looking for the best news in talk radio in Pensacola? Then tune in to News Radio Pensacola. We're your source for the latest news, weather, and traffic, as well as in-depth interviews with local and national leaders. We also have the best talk radio lineup in town, with hosts that are passionate about the issues that matter to you. So whether you're looking to stay informed or just want to hear some great conversation, News Radio Pensacola is the place for you. News Radio Pensacola. Informative, local, dependable.
Taking a look at our traffic, Gregory, Chase, not showing any delays. It looks like Cervantes is also clear all the way through Garden Street, Fairfield, not showing any problems. Stay tuned. Of course, the wrap is next, 437-1620. If you have traffic tips, News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Everybody jump, 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 jump.
I said a hip, hop, the hip, it, the hip, it, hip, hop, you don't stop.
Rap, rap.
I will definitely call you back later then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big circle
up. Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Commissioner Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
Wrap it up. I'll take it. Wrap it up. I'll take it. Wrap it up. I'll take it. Wrap it up. I'll take it.
It's 8:36 here on News Radio 92.3. Sorry, I was a little caught off guard. I thought we still had more time. It's my fault, though. I wasn't paying good enough attention. It's the wrap. It's Friday. That means that we have a couple of friends here in studio with me. I'm Andrew McKay. If you're for the first time just tuning in, welcome to the Pensacola Morning News. Travis Peterson, he is a friend. I hope he'll take that label.
Sure, today.
Today, for now. Sure. Fair enough. Repeat offender on the wrap. And first time participant, Charles Thornton, who is the vice chair of the Escambia Republican Party and the most vehement, disagreeer with me when I presented some of my ideas at the most recent Civitan meeting. He was well engaged with me and not always on the same side, and it was great fun. Charles, welcome to the program.
Glad to be here. First time here, and I like it. I visited the studio before, but I like it. And
all right.
We agreed to disagree on some things. We did.
Absolutely.
That means we're friends.
And by the way, one thing just kind of an of note, I guess, is you are the first time that somebody at that level of authority in the Escambia Republican Party has been a black man, right?
Yeah, it's first time. First African American to hold a position of vice chair. And I bring you as well as the public Democrats and Republicans. I bring you greetings from our chair, John Roberts, and the party. Okay.
So one thing I wanted to talk about, we've been talking a lot about housing, you know, rent prices, mortgage prices. We've been talking a lot about what I don't think I'm alone in thinking is kind of government failure to plan properly for growth, to build infrastructure around growth, a kind of a reactionary, oh, that's broken, let's fix it now, you know, kind of state of things. And I've just... open-ended question, okay? We obviously have a shortage of housing. We obviously need to have a building. We obviously have people who are willing to do that. But it seems to continually come in places where we're not equipped to handle it, with proper roads, proper water and sewer is not as much of an issue maybe, but certainly water management of stormwater is a huge issue in this regard, and schools are an issue. And I heard the town hall that Stephen Barry did last week, and I thought his basic answer was, you're not going to get elected officials to vote to build roads to subdivisions that don't exist yet when we can't even afford to pave all the roads that we already have and repave them and maintain them properly. And I thought that was a real abdication of leadership to basically say, well, we can't afford what we've already got, and we can't stop them making us have to build new stuff, so, eh, sucks to be us. What's the solution, though, here? Travis, you got any ideas?
You know, we were involved with some of the downtown development projects, and it's a real tough one. I mean, you have this need for more housing, this need for more housing stock, different types of housing. Not everybody wants to live in a single family home. Those homes, those neighborhoods actually require more infrastructure than do some of the more densely developed townhouse type developments or even single family units.
Can I just pause you there? Just because I don't want people to miss this point. It's such a good one.
Right.
If you have a house on an acre,
right,
the length of road and pipe and cable that has to serve that house is longer. And the distance that first responders have to go to serve that house is longer. So if you have 500 homes clustered in an area, the ability to provide infrastructure to them is far less expensive than the cost of infrastructure provided to 500 homes on agriculture, one house per acre. I love that you make that point. I just want to make sure people don't miss it, because it's a great observation.
It's a really important point, and it's also one of these things that kind of conservatives and progressives should be able to figure out, because it checks the box for both of us. We all want more housing. We want housing to be affordable. We need to be able to do it in a way that doesn't create long-term tax impacts for infrastructure and maintaining that. You know, the government does, private sector is not able to do housing in Florida, at least in an affordable way, for a lot of reasons: insurance costs, cost to build, regulatory impacts. It's just very difficult to, you know, just think about how much your hurricane insurance has gone up over the past year or two.
Or car insurance.
Well, yeah, we have teenage drivers. That's even, yeah. Yeah. Bless us both. But I think that, you know, it is an abdication of leadership, but we need to figure out a way to help do these public-private partnerships, really. That's the model that other communities are using successfully to expand their housing stock and do it in a way that's affordable.
Charles, what's the answer to all of this, if you have one?
Well, answer, I don't know, but I think you look at it, sound like you're saying that the problem, there's a problem with housing, and then you bring in affordable housing. My thing is that I look at their infrastructures, their houses being built, and a lot of these houses, when you have them compact on top of each other and stuff like that, that the infrastructure is not in place to support those as far as parking and things and sewage and different things like that. And affordability, and this is where the real issue comes in. How do you define affordable housing? To me, that's what we're going to have to really look at. What are we trying to do? Are we trying to build houses to figure out to meet the income level that we're trying to build these houses for? Because for some houses, the only thing that's affordable to some people are going to be HUD houses, and also you're going to have Section 8 houses and things like that. Do we need more HUD houses, Section 8 houses? Those are affordable for a certain level of the population.
Right.
We build houses, okay? We build houses. $2,000, is that affordable to some people? So what do we want to do? Do we want to go in and do gentrification or do this or do that and just take the property and build houses and call them affordable based on the size? What I think we try to equate size to affordability, because a lot of these houses, even though they're small and this or that, they're luxury houses. So how do you define it? Until we get a definitive on affordability, I don't believe the government, neither the private sector has the ability to define and build affordable houses. The only person that can do that is to come down from the state and the federal government, which would be the HUD Section 8. Other than that, you're digging in this. You're not solving the problem, which is homelessness.
And you also have this issue where even the available public housing is usually, I mean, it's in horrible places, like, you know, you have flood prone,
right?
And so the problem there is, what do you do about even the existing, you know, so-called affordable? We have one very, you know, well-known apartment complex that floods all the time. Now it's flooding less, but it's still, that really shouldn't exist, right? There ought to be a different place. And then how do you move those people with their vouchers over to a newer, you know, a better place? And I mean, that's a complicated subject. I agree with you. This whole issue of affordability is weird to me, because I remember a couple of years ago when all these very small, like, not quite shotgun because they were two-story, but homes downtown started to get infill built. And I thought, who wants to live in that at $300,000 or $400,000 a piece? And I thought, who can afford? And then every time it gets, they're just snapped up. They're just gone before they're available. And I thought, well, I mean, obviously, I don't understand this market because now things are, you know, five, six. I mean, it's amazing.
Speaking of the houses unit that you're talking about, which is Forest Creek and Oakwood Terrace and places like that, then when you stack people to put people in those places, you got to look at the environment that's surrounding. So now when you put so you got to be able to not only look at the affordability, but law enforcement, this, that. A lot of stuff has to be built in. Even the lower you go down on this, the least expensive it get, then the higher. Not just insurance, but the higher law enforcement and things like that.
Right.
So all those things have to be.
There's another slice of this, and maybe it's more the philosopher in me that's asking this question, but government seems to be doing at Escambia level and at the state level and at, you know, Pensacola City, Pensacola, clearly they're trying to create stock. They're trying to incentivize housing. We are clearly moving in a path toward much more interventionist government policy when it comes to housing stock, and because they think there's a scarcity and we need to help. And I'm not particularly in favor of that, but okay, here's the one thing I think about, though, is they're trying to control the out-of-control rising of the cost of rent and the cost of mortgages. Well, okay, I own a home, so I'm sort of insulated from that slice of things, but we have a rental house, and, you know, I'd love to buy another one, but, you know, can't afford it. They're so outrageously priced, but they're trying to make me make less money. I mean, right. Rent control, even if it's not rent control per se, if it's trying to reduce the price because you're increasing stock, that's the government working against the private sector, right? You know, you can hate the landlord who raises the rent, but the government trying to get rents depressed is hurting the investors, right?
Yeah, you're right, because the government, anytime the government try to put any type of price control on anything, it's not going to work, because eventually the price is going to depend on what the market can bear. If there's a market out there, and if somebody can rent houses at $2,000, no matter what the government come in and do, then they're going to get $2,000. Now, the only thing that the government, local, state, and whatever can control is what they're willing to subsidize. Are they willing to pay for? So does the government want to get into the business of being a landlord or this or that? Other than that, there is no control by the government, because it's what the market can bear.
And to the degree they get involved with rent controls, for example, they're going to drive investors out because they're taking away the profit motive to make them want to do it in the first place. Travis, I'll get to you in just a second, but Candy's got traffic on the fives.
And this is brought to you by Pensacola Energy. Did you know that most natural gas appliances work even with no power? So be storm ready with natural gas from Pensacola Energy. Learn more at PensacolaEnergy.com. And it looks like everything's running fine right now. 9 Mile not showing any issues now this morning. All exits off I-10, I-110 reporting as clear. And taking a look in the west side, Lillian, Jackson, Navy, New Warrington, all accident free. 437-1620, text in your traffic tips, News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Thanks so much, Candy. Travis, you were going to say.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, the challenge with the price control, rent control, those things have to happen before the development's done. It's almost impossible, and my friends may skewer me on this. It's also unfair to the investor to try to force these rent controls after the deal's done, right? There's already a mortgage on the property. They've already gotten insurance on the property. There are expenses that are baked into that. You know, you talk about your rental property. There's expenses that you have, and regardless of whether you have rent controls put on you or not, your insurance is still going to go up.
Right.
You know, next time there's a hurricane,
right,
you're still going to have that problem.
If you can get it, right?
Property taxes, you know, we've got a pretty small, you know, we're not getting huge incremental property taxes, but if it's not homesteaded, you still have a little bit more exposure on your property taxes there. The answer, in my opinion, and what other communities have done have been these true public-private partnerships, where you're pulling in a mix of sort of Section 8 HUD housing. You've got private sector dollars. I mean, the models that we've seen elsewhere are what they call mixed income housing. So you look at a place like Southtown, some of those units may be subsidized. Some of those units may be market rate.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's living in the same place. They're benefiting from the same experience, but you don't necessarily know if your neighbor is in that subsidized unit or not. But you've created the stock. The government has, you know, created sort of the offsets or the incentives, and you know, there's a model there. But doing it after the deal is done, that's a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah, and kind of to get back to the initial question, which was, so what do we need to do about these developments that are going everywhere and the roads are not keeping? I mean, the roads are clearly not keeping up. We haven't been keeping up with our roads for a long time, which was a certain level of problem when the number of people moving here wasn't all that great. Well, now that number has changed dramatically, and now we're exponentially behind as this problem cascades. But, you know, Stephen Barry made the argument, again, you know, nobody's going to vote to build a road to a subdivision that doesn't exist yet. I don't know that that's true, because I like the idea of creating capacity as you create the housing, because that's that kind of concurrency model that makes sense to me. But okay, that's going to take money. You know, are we willing to, you know, if the county commissioner said, okay, you know, we got this $700 million budget, and what we really need is a $740 million budget in order to pay for all of the proper infrastructure to avoid the chaos that's happening with all of these projects when they come online, with, you know, will this area elect commissioners who say we need a tax increase? Are we willing to pay extra in order to fund the proper level of infrastructure?
Or ask developers to pay impact fees.
Right. Which will still be house buyers, right.
In order to build affordable housing, just housing period, whether they're affordable or not, you got to have infrastructure. You can't build the house and then contact ECUA or contact the plumbing company, the electrical FPL. You got to, the infrastructure has to be in place first. So in that sense, I kind of disagree with Commissioner Barry, and I know him well. Nice person, but I kind of disagree. You're going to have to look at, well, number one, it don't take that much money to fill a pothole or fix a road. So that, we spend a lot of money on a lot of things that are a lot more extravagant. So I don't even buy into that right there. We should be able to go out and fill those potholes and do that stuff. And we should also be able to look at, just don't build roads to be building roads, but if there's a plan in place, if you have a company or someone that's willing to invest in that property, then the county should be able to work with them as far as putting that infrastructure in place.
It seems like the kind of problem we can solve. Do we have the political will to solve it? And, you know, do we have commissioners who are willing to make the case and cut elsewhere where maybe, you know, cuts need to be? And I mean, it's a complicated problem. It doesn't seem to be all that complicated to solve that one in particular.
And just do the math.
Yeah, right. How much does it take?
Right. What's your ad valorem tax revenue going to be on this new subdivision? Do the math.
Yep, that's where things like you said, impact fees can come into play. In the past, you know, we had concurrency. We don't really have that anymore. Switching gears just a little bit, it hasn't become quite the top of mind big question yet, but it's been sort of percolating up. I see a few more news stories about it. There is a growing movement to say that President Trump is not eligible for re-election because of the 14th Amendment. Because the 14th Amendment says that if you participate in an insurrection or a rebellion against the United States government, or you give aid or comfort to the enemies thereof, you are ineligible to be president, or in really any office, senator, representative, elector. And there's some quibbles about the particular language here, but that's the language of Section 3 of the amendment. And it even says Congress can vote by 2/3 to remove your ineligibility, which seems to mean that the ineligibility just is if you've done this thing. And there's a lot of question, well, would he have to be convicted of something? And, you know, he clearly didn't, I don't think he participated in what some people call the insurrection or the rebellion. But I don't think you can argue that he gave aid and comfort and encouragement, verbal support to at least some of the behavior that was going on that day, and certainly could have done more to discourage. What do you think? Is the president, former president, disqualified by the 14th Amendment? Is this a terrible way to decide who's eligible to run for president? And what would happen if something like this, because there's been a law case filed already in Colorado, I think it's Colorado, and there are attorneys generals around the state, some of whom are saying, hell no, you don't get to pull Trump off the ballot. And others are like, yeah, we're doing that. Travis?
You know, personally, I think that like you said, he definitely provided aid and comfort. I think there's a case that one could make for the 14th Amendment clause, but I also just don't think that's the way to win an election. I don't think that, and I don't know that that helps our democracy get through this really rough patch.
If you have people who already think the system is out to get their guy,
correct,
doing disqualifying him this way is only going to strengthen that sentiment, right?
Correct. I mean, there's a real argument to be made about what does our democracy look like depending on who wins the election in 2024. So what does our country look like in 2025, 26, and beyond? I don't know that though that using this tactic is one. As a Democrat, I'd prefer we just beat Trump. Just beat him. Just win.
Okay. The 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment, when it came into place right after the Civil War,
yep.
that amendment came, and it had to do with the North and the South, you know, when the South was coming in, and at that time the South was considered to be the enemy, and whatever, when the country was coming together. But as far as President Trump, he has been accused of a lot of things, and I think there's 190 some things out there, but it's not gonna work. And if you try that, then what's gonna happen? That's gonna be peaceful. There's gonna be some peaceful resistance from the grassroots up. The only way to stop it, stop President Trump, former President Trump, is at the voting booth. If anything happened outside of the voting booth, there's already a perception among those on the right, that the system is out to get him, because there are some other things going on with President Biden and his son
Yep.
So there's the system has a heavy hand. So there are those who's going to try, and some of them may even try to bring COVID back.
Well, yeah, people that are concerned about that as well, and the reaction to it. Yeah,
in order to beat him.
Well, the the interesting thing about this particular argument with the 14th Amendment is it's partially about what happened on January 6th, mm-hmm. but it's also the entire lead up to trying to subvert the transition of power, to call into question the legitimacy of the election. They say that entire scheme, that activity for which he's now being indicted, you know, in charge, that's part of it.
But we have had that to happen for so long.
Both sides,
you know, Gore versus Bush. You had it happen in Atlanta, in Georgia. We've had it happen in Ohio. The only thing we have not had is folks running to the Capitol, going into the Capitol and taking up. But folks have actually second guessed the election, even when President Trump came into play. It's political. It will eventually play itself out. And I think what the folks that are pushing this, what they probably need to understand, that even if they come after former President Trump and say they take him off the ballot, that's not going to make it any easier, because mm-hmm. what's going to happen then is you're going to have another candidate. Just because they have a flawed candidate and they don't, the Democrats have a flawed candidate and they don't know what to do with them. So it's not, don't look at us, look at this guy, bad Trump. So they can, but you can keep doing it, but it's a no win. You got to beat him based on the issues,
right?
You got to beat him based on the issues, because at the end of the day, he has a base of support, and all he has to do is expand it. But
and look, as a conservative who loves the rule of law and takes the Constitution seriously and says I believe in it and every word that's in it, I have to take the historical and the argument on the facts seriously, but as a practical matter, this is a horrible way to try to achieve a political outcome. Candy's got traffic on the fives.
And watching an accident at 9th and Underwood Avenue. It's near PSC, but showing an accident, but not a slowdown. Looks like it's been moved off to the side. If you have traffic tips, though, text them in 437-1620, News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Go ahead, Travis. Yeah.
Interestingly enough, in Democratic circles, there's an internal question, and it's been played out in some of the media circles, about whether President Biden should pardon President Trump for the simple fact of moving the democracy forward.
Interesting.
You know, there have been some folks, Dan Gelbert down in Miami Beach wrote an op-ed that said that, listen, and he's a former prosecutor, he's put people in jail for these things, but does our democracy survive that? And then on the other side, there are folks who say, listen, we're a country that believes in the rule of law.
Yep.
And if you did the crime, you got to do the time.
You know, strategically, it's interesting. I had not heard that. That's fascinating, because I think that if Biden pardoned Trump of everything, blanket, whatever, you know, allegations are out there, if he just, and I don't know if he can lawfully pardon him before there's a conviction anyway, that's an open question, I'd say. But let's say he could. okay? Or even if he declares, you guys can do whatever you want, if anything comes of it, I'm going to pardon him. It would be a huge political win for him.
Or commute sentences.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. But that would be, it would be healthier for the democracy. Yeah. And it would be a big political win for Biden because he would look so reasonable, so magnanimous, so pro-fairness in the election. I mean, interesting.
I just want you to know that from where I sit and our party sit, we prefer that if Trump pardon himself or some Republican president pardon him.
Gotcha.
Instead of Biden. So our goal is not to have Biden pardon him.
Charles Thornton and Travis Peterson, thank you so much for the time, gentlemen. Have a great weekend. Excellent conversation.
Thanks, Andy.